The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday. Today's Wednesday. Hey, everybody. I'm Nicole Sandler here at the Progressive Voices Network and, of course, at NicoleSandler.com. And if you're wondering what our freedom of the press alert level is today, it's still off camera. Yeah, the White House, as Laffy likes to call it, lying session. Today is once again off camera, third day in a row. And it's actually more if you count the off camera briefings they had at the G20 and leading up to it. I guess they just don't want you to see them lying, because when, you know, it's one thing when you hear the voices. I guess maybe that's why people like watching radio on YouTube. I'm an old radio person, so I like the microphone and the headphones and the mystery of just the voice coming out of the speakers, but I'm old school and old. Anyway, that's what they're doing today. Today's afternoon briefing, I guess, just getting underway around now, coming at after a morning of hearings in the Senate Judiciary Committee, the confirmation hearings for the nominated FBI director, Christopher Wray. I didn't hear a lot of it. I was kind of busy this morning. And then every time I turned it on, I just got a little more disgusted, because Christopher Wray seems like a nice enough fellow, but doesn't really seem to know a whole lot of what's going on. And I heard this one exchange with Lindsey Graham, and it kind of made my skin crawl.
Should Donald Trump Jr. have taken that meeting?
Well, Senator, I'm hearing for the first time your description of it, so I'm not really in a position to speak to it. I gather that Special Counsel Mueller
would... Well, let me ask you this. If I got a call from somebody saying the Russian government wants to help Lindsey Graham get reelected, they've got dirt on Lindsey Graham's opponent, should I take that meeting?
Well, Senator, I would think you'd want to consult with some good legal advisors before you did that.
So the answer is, should I call the FBI?
Mm-hmm. I think it would be wise to let the FBI
know. You're going to be the director of the FBI, pal.
Pal.
So here's what I want you to tell every politician.
Pal.
If you get a call from somebody suggesting that a foreign government wants to help you by disparaging your opponent, tell us all to call the FBI.
To the members of this committee, any threat or effort to interfere with our elections from any nation state or any non-state actor is the kind of thing the FBI would want to know.
All right, so I'll take that we should call you, and that's a great answer.
Wow. Wow. At this point, I'd rather confirm Lindsey Graham as the new director of the FBI than Christopher Wray. Not serious. No lawmaker, no elected official should be the director of the FBI. But this guy seemed woefully unprepared. And the bottom line is he'll get confirmed. He did say that if he was asked to take a loyalty oath, he wouldn't. He would resign. I think he said that. But he wasn't really aware of what's going on. He wasn't aware of the parameters, for example, of Jeff Sessions' recusal from the whole Russia investigation. I find that a bit worrisome. He did say, though, that the Russia investigation is not a witch hunt. So, hey, we got that going for us. Last night, well, as I said yesterday, I didn't watch it. I didn't watch Donnie Jr. on with Insanity Hannity, but here's a little bit of what he said in a, well, here.
Did you tell your father anything about this?
No. It was such a nothing. There was nothing to tell. I mean, I wouldn't have even remembered it until you start scouring through the stuff. It was literally just a wasted 20 minutes, which was a shame.
I'll tell you what was a waste of 20 minutes. Well, we'll waste another 52 seconds and that's it here.
I think, like I said, in retrospect, I probably would have done things a little differently. Again, this is before the Russia mania. This is before they were building it up in the press. For me, this was opposition research. They had something, you know, maybe concrete evidence to all the stories I'd been hearing about, but they were probably underreported for, you know, years, not just during the campaign. So I think I wanted to hear it out. But really, it went nowhere, and it was apparent that that wasn't what the meeting was actually about.
Okay, let me ask a hypothetical. And I know hypotheticals, maybe you've thought about it since, and since this has now become Russia collusion, yeah. Russia collusion, and et cetera. Did you ever meet with any other person from Russia that you know?
You know, I don't even know. I've probably met with other people from Russia.
I mean,
but certainly
during the
not in the context of actual a formalized meeting mm-hmm. or anything like that. Because why would I? You know, in the grand scheme of things, how busy we were, it was much more important to doing this. This was a courtesy to an acquaintance.
Just to refresh your memory, about 4 to 6 weeks after that meeting, this was Junior on CNN.
I mean, they'll say anything to be able to win this. I mean, this is time and time again, lie after lie. It's disgusting. It's so phony. I can't think of bigger lies, but that exactly goes to show you what the DNC and what the Clinton camp will do. They will lie and do anything to win. I don't mind a fair fight, but these lies and the perpetuating of that kind of nonsense to try to, you know, gain some political capital is just outrageous, and he should be ashamed of himself.
Yeah, that was regarding an allegation that some of Trump's campaign people had met with some Russians who were looking to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. Yeah, it's disgusting. I agree. Really, really disgusting. Can I tell you who else is disgusting? Steve King. Steve King of Iowa. This morning, I watched a little bit of CNN, and I was misfortunate enough to see this exchange between Allison Camerota and Iowa Steve King. They were talking about the funding for a defense authorization bill, which is one of the things that Congress is ostensibly working on. Maybe it's one of the things that the Senate will work on in the 2 weeks of their August recess that they're losing. Anyway, just brace yourself for this. This is how ugly, how cruel today's Republican Party is.
Are you comfortable, Congressman, with providing $1.6 billion of taxpayer money, not from Mexico, to build that wall?
Absolutely, yes, and more. And I'd throw another $5 billion on the pile,
oh,
and I would find a half of $1 billion of that right out of Planned Parenthood's budget. And the rest of it could come out of food stamps and the entitlements that are being spread out for people that haven't worked in three generations. We've got to put America back to work. This administration will do it. And we've got to free them up so that they can and support the right agenda for this country.
You want to take food from people who are the people who are on the lowest rung in terms of the nation's safety net and their children in terms of food stamps. You're happy to take, you're willing to take money from them to build the 1.6 or to give the 1.6 billion for the border wall?
For a couple of reasons. One of them would be that, you know, we will create the kind of security that would bring about 10 million new jobs
How?
In America just by enforcing immigration
Picking
law.
Lettuce?
Second thing is, I wouldn't impose anything any more strict on anybody in America than what Michelle Obama did with her school lunch program.
Oh, my God.
And so I would just say, let's limit it to that. Anybody that wants to have food stamps up to the school lunch program, that's fine. And but we have seen this go from 19 million people on now SNAP program up to 47 million people on the SNAP program.
Yeah,
because
they're hungry.
Think all of them need it.
Oh, I'm sure that all of them didn't need it. And so we need to set this down and ratchet it back down again. We built the program because to solve the problem of malnutrition in America.
Yeah.
And now we have a problem of obesity. And when you match up the EBT card with what the
oh
scales say on some of the folks, I think it's worth looking at. Michelle Obama looked at it. Republicans should be able to look at it, too.
You know, there's so many things wrong with that, and I don't have the time really to get into all the things that are wrong with it. But obesity and overeating don't necessarily go together. Do you know it is 3 times more expensive to eat healthy, nutritious foods than it is to eat cheap, overly processed fast food? So if people are obese, it's because they're eating bad, crappy food that makes you fat. Oh God, there's so many things wrong there. I don't know about you, but I need a shot of sanity. So in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, I've been trying to get Senator Sanders back on the program for quite a while now. He was in Miami. He did the tour, you know, with Tom Perez, the you know, going out and trying to talk to young people to get them to register as Democrats. Because frankly,
If we have any chance of getting Donald Trump and that ilk, the Steve Kings and such, out of power, the only way to do it, I'm all for building a third party, but to get them out of power quickly, the only way I think that'll happen is if people register as Democrats and just vote those bums out. Then you work on reshaping the Democratic Party from the inside or building a third party within it, taking over leadership. There are other ways to do it. But the first order of business is getting them out of there. So I've been begging for Bernie Sanders to come on the show. And obviously, you know what my medical situation is. To be honest with you, and I start talking about this and I tear up, so I have a hard time doing it. But the whole healthcare issue scares the bejesus out of me, and I don't have any bejesus in me. So, the fact of the matter is, if the Republicans are successful in killing off the Affordable Care Act, there are millions of people in my position, people with pre-existing conditions, people who are not making a lot of money, people who depend on the Affordable Care Act to have health insurance, and without it, they're in danger of, you know, perhaps dying. Yeah. So when Bernie was here, I was hoping to get a few minutes with him then. Obviously, things were chaotic. It didn't happen. But I spoke with his people, and I've kept in touch, and I've badgered them enough that last night I got a phone call, and they said, if you want Bernie for about 10 minutes tomorrow morning, you can tape something. What he wants to talk about is the Republicans' efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And I said, hell yeah. So I did get that opportunity. You know what? Let's not wait any longer. He called. It was about a little before 11 this morning. To be honest with you, I wasn't feeling great. Probably not the best interview I've ever done with Bernie Sanders. But hey, any time with Bernie is good time with Bernie. So here we go. Hello, Senator Sanders.
Hello, Nicole. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I am fine.
Good. Thank you so much for a few minutes this morning. It's great to talk with you again. I just wish it wasn't at such a scary time. It looks like the Republicans are trying to take away our health care again.
Yes, they are. And these guys are not going to give up, and we've got to do everything we can to resist them.
So the latest we hear is that the newest version of the BCRA will be released on Thursday, tomorrow. And it'll be scored by the CBO next week, and then it'll be brought to the floor for a vote. What are the chances, you think?
Look, these guys are not going to give up. They are motivated by ideology, which says that government is terrible and that we want to break every public health program that we possibly can. After they're through with health care, trust me, they're going to go to Social Security. They're going to go to the Veterans Administration, go after the post office. That's what their ideology is, not to mention that the very richest people in this country love the idea that under this Republican health care plan, they can get hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks, as well as insurance companies getting tax breaks, et cetera, et cetera. So we are engaged in a real tough fight. The good news is the American people are beginning to catch on, that when you throw 22 million Americans off of health insurance, when you defund Planned Parenthood, when you raise premiums for older workers, when you cut Medicaid by $800 billion, this is a disaster, an unprecedented attack on health care in America. Latest poll that I saw, Nicole, had 12% of the American people supporting this absurd proposal. Our job is to keep the fight going. And the American people have got to stay on the phones. They've got to go to rallies. They've got to go to town meetings. They have to make sure that their Republican legislators understand that they will not accept this horrific piece of legislation.
Right. And there are a number of tools out there. We've been talking about them here. TrumpCareToolkit.org is one. But the best thing to do is simply call your senators every
email
day.
Email your senator.
Email.
Let them know that you know what's going on. What Republicans hope here, as they often do, is that the American people don't know what's going on. You know, the media often engages in speculation and who wins and who loses, but they don't talk about what's in the bill. But the more that the American people understand what is in this terrible bill, they're saying, you're kidding me. You're not going to really throw 22 million people off of health insurance to give tax breaks to billionaires. That is what this bill is about. So let's keep the pressure up. So far, we have been able to push them back. There are a number of wavering senators. Some have one reason for opposition. Some have a different reason. But our job is to make sure they don't get the 50 votes they need to pass this.
You know, Senator Sanders, since the last time you and I spoke, my life took a drastic turn. I was diagnosed with lung cancer last year.
Oh, God.
And my insurance is through the Affordable Care Act. Now, I got lucky because we caught it early. I had surgery. I'm now 10 months cancer-free, knocking on wood laminate. But if they are successful in repealing the Affordable Care Act, I'll be unable to get the tests that I need every 4 months to go forward.
Well, first of all, Nicole, the best, you know, I hadn't known this. I wish you the best for a full recovery here.
Thank you.
But I you touch, and thank you for talking about this publicly.
I do.
I was just watching Fox Television an hour ago. My staff had the television on, and I was being lambasted because Sanders says that people will die if the affordable, if this legislation goes through. And what a terrible guy Bernie Sanders is. Here is the truth. I made the statement a few weeks ago on television that, in fact, thousands of people will die.
Yep.
Because the obvious truth is, if you're struggling with cancer, if you're struggling with heart disease, if you're struggling with diabetes, if you're struggling with a life-threatening disease and you have no health insurance and you have no money, you tell me what happens to those people. And what study after study after study, it's not me, the Harvard School of Public Health, estimates that if they threw 23 million people off of off of health insurance, up to 28,000 people a year would die.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. This is life and death stuff. This is a horrific piece of legislation, and we have got to defeat it. And by the way, the next thing we have got to do is, after we defeat this terrible bill, we have got to mobilize the American people from coast to coast in the fight for a Medicare for All single-payer program. The United States has got to join every other major country on earth and guarantee health care to all people as a right.
Is there a chance that, you know, this is not looking good, but I don't put anything beyond the Republicans. They have all kinds of bags of dirty tricks. If it fails next week, Mitch McConnell has made some threats about, maybe having to work with Democrats. Is there the possibility of working together to, first of all, shore up the markets, to fix the markets so that there is insurance available in places where it's hard to get now, and maybe to finally get that public option in, so someone like me, who's 57 years old, could buy into Medicare?
The answer is in the first point that you raised, shoring up, doing what we call cost sharing here. The answer is, I think, yes. What rational people would do, Nicole, is to acknowledge that the Affordable Care Act is far from perfect. Deductibles are too high. Co-payments are too high, premiums are too high, and prescription drug costs are way too high. So the question is, how can we rationally and intelligently deal with those problems? And one of the answers is just what you proposed, is to make sure that every American in every state in this country has the choice of a public option if he or she is not satisfied with the private insurance that's out there. That is one of the solutions that I think we should be offering, something that I support.
Why do they talk about it as if it's a dirty thing that they, you know, they're blaming the Democrats as being the obstructionists, which is really funny after the last 8 years, but they're not willing to talk to the Democrats about working together to make the Affordable Care Act to fix it.
Nicole, I mean, this is why this legislation is at 12% in the polls. All right, it's not only that it is a horrible piece of legislation, is this whole process in an unprecedented way has been beyond, you know, literally beyond belief. It's not only that they're not working with Democrats. They have not had one public hearing. You tell me how you bring forth legislation which impacts every single American. That's what health care does. 1/6 of our economy, over $3 trillion, and you don't have one public hearing. You don't hear from one doctor. You know, the American Medical Association is against it. The American Hospital Association is against it. AARP is against it. Every major healthcare organization in this country is against this bill. There has not been one public hearing to allow them to say why they are opposed to this bill or what improvements they want in the Affordable Care Act. This is, you know, everything is done behind closed doors. Everything is done to benefit the billionaire class and the insurance companies. And this whole process has been a disaster beyond belief.
So do you see, if it goes down this week, any chance of working together? Has Mitch McConnell made any noises that didn't sound like threats about working with the Democrats?
I mean, I think there is a possibility, yes. I think there are enough non-crazy Republicans who understand that something has to be done.
I so
but
appreciate
the answer to your question is yes.
Great. It's good to know that. I know there are so many other things in the world right now. This is a crazy time, but I think back a few years ago, you and I spoke all during the whole run-up to the Affordable Care Act, and that went on for a couple of years with all the hearings and all the different committees writing it. This is a way to make America sicker, and thank you for your work in trying to fix it. Senator Bernie Sanders, the best way you think to reach out is to email our senators or call?
Get your friend do the emails, do the phone calls, get your friends who may be living in states that have Republican senators to get on the phone as well.
Okay. Senator Bernie Sanders, it's great to talk with you again. Thank you so much for checking in with us today.
Okay. Nicole, you take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Senator Bernie Sanders, short but sweet. He's you know what? He's got a reputation as being such a curmudgeon. I've still yet to meet him in person. One time I was in D.C. and we were going to have a face-to-face meeting, and he got called. He had to preside over the Senate while I was there. I still haven't gotten to meet him in person. But every time I've interviewed him, spoken to him, and it's been easily a dozen or so times over the years, he has always been wonderfully charming and kind and really nice, maybe because I treat him with the respect that he deserves. This is it. This is, again, the timeline is tomorrow they're going to release the new version of the BCRA, which stands for the Better Care Reconciliation Act. Give me a fucking break. On Monday or thereabouts, the new CBO score should come in. There are actually going to be two versions. One that's just the straight up bill, which I understand is not very different from the other one. It doesn't change the Medicaid provisions at all. So hopefully that means Susan Collins is still out. Shelley Moore Capita is still out. And it doesn't do much of anything. The other version has an amendment in it that's the Ted Cruz amendment that would let them start selling junk policies again. That was one of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act that makes it work. So it prohibited insurance companies from selling you a crappy policy that didn't cover you. A lot of people thought they had insurance and it was so cheap. Yeah, but what happens if you go to the hospital? You're not covered. If you got sick, you're not covered. If you needed prescription drugs, you're not covered. Ted Cruz wants them to be able to do that again, to take your money for really nothing in return. So I believe both of those versions are going to be scored. We still don't know what they're going to bring to the floor, if anything. Right now, the last I heard, it doesn't even look like they have the votes for cloture, meaning they don't have the votes to open debate. But we need to keep it that way. So do as Senator Sanders said. I was surprised to hear from him that emailing is a good option. I thought they kind of ignored emails, but I guess they don't. So call, email, go down there if you can, but this is the time for all our voices to be heard. And you don't want me to have to read Horton Hears a Who again, because every yop counts, every single one. All right. With all the noise coming out of the White House, you know, all the leaks are coming out of the White House. I've always been wondering, I've been asking myself, what is the difference between a whistleblower and a leaker? In many cases, I think they're one and the same. And I told you a while ago that it was a few years back, I interviewed the guy who wrote the book, The Whistleblower's Handbook. And I said, I'm going to track him down again and get him back on the show. And sure enough, I did. And it turns out a very precipitous timing, because the newly updated version of The Whistleblower's Handbook was just released last week. How about that for timing? So we'll take a break. We'll check out what's news, and we'll come back with Stephen Cohn of the National Whistleblower Center next.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Tuesday's White House press briefing was again off camera, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders began with the first statement from the president about the latest Russia intrigue featuring his eldest son.
I have a quick statement that I'll read from the president. My son is a high quality person, and I applaud his transparency. And beyond that, I'm going to have to refer everything on this matter to John Jr.'s counsel and outside counsel, and won't have anything else to add beyond that today.
That didn't stop the reporters from asking questions.
Again, I don't have, beyond the statements yesterday and what I write today, I don't have anything else to add, Jill. Once again, I know you guys are going to get tired of it today, and not to sound like a broken record, but on all questions related to this matter, I would refer you to Don Jr.'s counsel.
You're not disputing any of the facts.
I'm simply referring you to people that can answer that question. Once again, to repeat myself, I'm going to refer you to the outside counsel, and I don't have anything else to add. Look, the president gave a statement on the matter, which I read to you, and like I've said, I don't have anything else to add beyond that. I'm not going to get into the back and forth on that. Again, I've said all that we're going to say on that matter, and anything further, you guys are going to have to reach out to outside counsel. I don't know how many times we'll have to address this.
Excuse me, the record stuck. 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 The record stuck.
The Washington Post editorial board on Wednesday trumpets the headline, "The Russia meddling story is no longer just smoke. It's fire." They ask this recurring question: how long can the rest of the Republican Party prioritize partisanship and agenda over decency and patriotism? The answer might mean that some of the walls are beginning to crumble. On Fox, Trey Gowdy, chair of the House Oversight Committee, finally admitted to being troubled by the latest revelations.
I'm troubled on three levels. Number one, the legal level, but I think that's Bob Mueller's lane. The political level, here we are beginning another week, this one in July, with a new revelation about Russia. And then the third, which is more of a medical issue, is the amnesia of people that are in the Trump orbit. Someone close to the president needs to get everyone connected with that campaign in a room and say, from the time you saw Dr. Zhivago until the moment you drank vodka with a guy named Boris, you list every single one of those, and we're going to turn them over to the special counsel, because this drip, drip, drip is undermining the credibility of this administration.
On The Late Show Tuesday night, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough left his soon-to-be former party behind.
Again, it was disturbing through the entire campaign. In February, when he talked about David Duke and pretended that he didn't know who David Duke was and didn't know what the Ku Klux Klan did, you didn't have Republicans coming out saying, "I can never support Donald Trump because he's racist." They'd have 1,000 other excuses why. But they always overlook that. Judge Curiel, when he called a guy from Indiana, he attacked him, said he can never be fair because he's Hispanic. Republicans didn't come out and say, "I can never vote for Donald Trump because he's a racist." Time and time and time again, they turned the other way. And they're doing the same thing now. And it's actually disgusting. And you have to ask yourself, what exactly is the Republican Party willing to do? How far are they willing to go? How much of this country and our values are they willing to sell out?
But aren't you a Republican?
I am a Republican, but I'm not going to be a Republican anymore. I've got to become an independent.
Donald Jr. appeared on Fox News Hannity to deny any wrongdoing.
Did you tell your father anything about this?
No. It was such a nothing. There was nothing to tell. I mean, I wouldn't have even remembered it until you start scouring through the stuff. It was literally just a wasted 20 minutes, which was a shame.
Stay tuned. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that the August recess will begin 2 weeks later than planned to deal with health care.
Under enormous pressure, not just from Republican senators, but also the president of the United States weighing in on Twitter over the weekend, saying he could not see how the senators could be prepared to go on an August vacation if Obamacare repeal and replace is not yet been completed. Mitch McConnell bowing to that pressure and saying that, yes, indeed, at least will be delayed for the first 2 weeks in August, giving them about a three-week August recess. Now, this comes as the Republicans are really struggling right now to get this health care bill passed. There's an effort right now by Mitch McConnell to rewrite the bill that they delayed and did not have the vote on initially right before the July 4th holiday. And that new bill is going to be unveiled later this week. We expect a vote as soon as next week. But right now, we're getting indications from people on Capitol Hill that there's very little chance that that bill will pass the Senate next week, given the opposition from not just Democrats, but a number of Republicans as well.
The new bill expected to be released Thursday, with a CBO score on Monday and a vote next week. Use TrumpCareToolkit.org every day. It's all hands on deck time. The Senate Judiciary Committee on Wednesday holding a confirmation hearing for the president's pick for FBI Director Christopher Wray. And if some of your favorite websites look a bit different on Wednesday, it's because it's the online day of action for net neutrality. Visit battleforthenet.com for more information. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. The Nicole Sandler Show and What's News are 100% listener funded. So if you appreciate what we do, I hope you'll consider a contribution. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm excited for our next guest because I've been talking a lot lately, haven't we all, about whistleblowers and leakers. And so I'm thrilled to welcome Stephen M. Cohen back to the show. He's one of the nation's leading advocates for corporate and government whistleblowers and the author of the new Whistleblowers Handbook, the new revised edition just out a week or so. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Nicole. I'm really looking forward to the show.
You know, I want to start with all the leaks that have been in the news lately, to get some definitions. What is a whistleblower, and conversely, what is a leaker?
Sure. So, a whistleblower is really blowing the whistle on violations of law, matters in the public interest, official corruption. So you can leak on anything. You can leak about gossip and marital problems or whatever. But so a whistleblower is really in the heart of government accountability, anti-corruption. Second, going all the way back to the U.S. Revolution, the right to engage in freedom of speech confidentially and anonymously has been protected, and the Supreme Court recognizes it as a fundamental right. So the mere fact that a whistleblower decides to keep their identity confidential when they go to the news media has no impact whatsoever on their entitlement to protection and their status as a whistleblower.
Okay. So somebody, for instance, right now we have people inside the White House who have to be leaking out information, probably due to fear of being inside of such an inept administration. I'm not to put words in your mouth, they're mine. But I mean, so information is getting out. Those people, to me, they're whistleblowers because they want the public to know what's going on. Does that work under that definition?
Oh, yes. So anyone, in other words, speaking to the news media on matters of public concern, if you're a government employee, is protected under the First Amendment as speech and as whistleblowing. And then you have the right to go confidentially. So if someone works in the White House, has information about corruption or lies and deceit, and they decide to leak that information to the press, they are, in my view, fully protected under the U.S. Constitution and under the whistleblower laws. Now, it's a little more complex because most people who work in the White House have no protection from being fired. They're at will, and they're politically appointed. So the whistleblower laws won't save their job, but it will keep them out of jail.
Okay. Now, but then, well, we'll get to it because there have been many whistleblowers who have been prosecuted and many, an inordinate amount, it seems, were prosecuted under the Espionage Act during the Obama administration, which seems to go against common sense, but that's been happening. But I want to stick with what's happening right now. For instance, with James Comey. James Comey released memos that he wrote to himself, making sure that he didn't release anything that was classified. But in order to, I think, push back on a narrative that the president tweeted out about a meeting they had. Is that considered leaking? Is that considered whistleblowing or neither one?
Well, again, the thing to understand is there's no difference. If you're exposing official misconduct, you have the right to do it anonymously and confidentially. We call that, quote unquote, leakers. It's a fairly derogatory term.
Yeah.
It's really blowing the whistle anonymously and to the press, fully protected. Going back to Comey, again, you just have to analyze it. He was a private citizen when he did it, so he's protected under the First Amendment. He released information that he obtained when he worked for the government, but it was of a matter of public concern. That's the test. So he's protected. There is no information whatsoever that what was given to his friend to give to the New York Times was in any way confidential under law. Not because someone wants to keep it confidential, but whether there's a law that says it cannot be released.
Mm-hmm.
So because the information he was releasing was not prohibited by law, that would be considered protected under the First Amendment. Now, if you want to call him a whistleblower, or you just want to call him someone engaging in First Amendment speech, that's semantics. Bottom line is the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech is ultimately the most powerful whistleblower law in the United States.
Now, Stephen M. Cohen is with us. He's with the National Whistleblower Center, which you can find at whistleblower.org. You're on Twitter at Stop Fraud and Facebook at National Whistleblower Center as well. And like I said, the new version of the new whistleblower's guide or handbook is now out. The people, though, are prosecuted for whistleblowing all the time. How is that?
Okay, sure. Just one thing is our website's whistleblowers with an F.
Ah, whistleblowers.org.
Another thing. Okay, so here's how it goes. Under the Supreme Court case that said government workers have a First Amendment right to blow the whistle to the press, the court continued and said you would have to balance those disclosures with the government's legitimate interest in secrecy. And further on, as other cases have come out, we know that if there is a statute that makes something secret, then if you blow the if you release that, you can be prosecuted. But if there's no statute, then it looks like under the new case law, you cannot be prosecuted. So it's kind of like a bright line. The cases where people have been prosecuted concerned top secret information that was legally classified. So therefore, you could not release it. But I want to say, and this is in the handbook and explains it, all because the government classifies something, declares it secret, doesn't mean it's secret and doesn't mean you can't blow the whistle on it. And the government doesn't want its employees to know how to do it. So for people in national security, they essentially tell them, you leak, you go to jail. But in reality, there are certain laws that workers in the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, with access to top secret information, can utilize to clear their information and release it lawfully to the public. And we've been working on that for many years, and it's very important from our perspective to get that out into the public discussion. There are ways to move information that the government is improperly classifying and move it lawfully so people can expose it.
And you have that. The new Whistleblower's Handbook is subtitled A Step-by-Step Guide to Doing What's Right and Protecting Yourself. And you're not only talking about government whistleblowers. This applies to corporate whistleblowers, too. How big of a deal, how big of a universe is the corporate whistleblowing?
Well, corporate's much bigger, and the laws are much better. In the corporate sector, whistleblowers can now get a financial reward for turning in high-quality evidence of corporate crimes, tax evasion, defrauding the government on contracts, Medicare, Medicaid fraud, Wall Street fraud, banking fraud. These laws have really gotten better. Now, they're under attack now by the Republicans in the House trying to overturn Dodd-Frank. But as of today, these laws are super strong. Just last term, they passed a remarkable law called the Defense of Trade Secret Act. What that law did, it said that if you work in a private company and the company declares information under the Trade Secrets Act, where, in other words, you're not allowed to release it to anybody, you can give trade secret information to the law enforcement agencies, to government regulators, and you can be protected from retaliation and have your right to do it. So in the private sector, there's no such thing as classification anymore. No matter what a private company says or how restrictive they say your information is, you can blow the whistle to the government as long as you follow these very good whistleblower laws.
Wow. And you have, I believe, 30 rules on how to go through it and do it. So if you're an executive at a big corporation and you know that they are breaking laws, there are ways not only to turn in the corporation, but to get some financial reward for yourself.
Yeah. And you're hitting it right on the head. If you're an executive, so in the old days, most whistleblowers were lower level. But under these new laws, because you can go anonymously and confidentially and qualify for very large monetary rewards, you see high-level executives coming forward. I represent vice presidents. I've even represented the president of a company. Hmm. They will come forward. Why? Because they're actually honest people that are sickened that their company is engaging in misconduct. In the old days, there was no way for them to express that dissent. And it was unrealistic to assume that someone's making a lot of money in a big position is going to blow the whistle. That has changed.
So the reward money comes from the government. For instance, if it's a tax scam or a Medicare fraud, those rewards, do they always come from the government?
Okay, so here's how it works. And it's really the perfect storm for accountability. So I'm working for a company. They're engaging, say, in securities fraud, right? And I give the information to the government. They prosecute. They get a $10 million sanction against the company. My reward only comes from the money the company is paying. It never comes from the taxpayer. So now this company has to pay a $10 million sanction.
Wow.
Under the securities law, I'm entitled to 10 to 30% of that sanction. So I am entitled to between $1 to $3 million reward by statute, by law. And so the $10 million the company's paying, say I get $2 million, the government makes $8 million. Everyone's a winner. The government makes money. The corporation's held accountable. The whistleblower is protected in the best way you can protect a whistleblower, which is compensation.
Hmm. That's interesting. I'm looking through some of the rules. You can find them at kkc.com/handbook. You've got the list of the 30 rules in the book. And there's one that says, beware of hotlines. It makes me think of, recently Fox News, News Corp, has had a problem with a lot of sexual harassment claims. Does this fall under that as well? Because the women who were being harassed were told that they had to call the hotline, but when they talked to the hotline, they were retaliated against. Is that somehow related?
Yeah, it is. These hotlines, so if you're a victim of sexual harassment, The laws and the procedures that cover you are very similar to whistleblower laws. On the other hand, if you're blowing the whistle that the company doesn't, you know, isn't protecting women, then you're a whistleblower. So it can be fair, you know, they can come very similar. Bottom line is these corporate hotlines can be dangerous. They can be a wolf in sheep's clothing. A lot of companies put them under the control of their attorneys. They declare all the information coming in and all of their investigations attorney-client privilege. So you may think you're reporting and something good's going to come out, but the company is using the information and lawfully can use it however they want. And collect information on you and then use it in your employment case against you.
Wow.
They can make you the fall person. And or they can just declare it all secret, say if it supports you, and declare it all attorney-client privilege, and you can't even get the investigation report in discovery. So these programs that are run by the corporate attorneys, and many are real traps for the innocent.
I see. So another good, if you think there's something going on at your company, the new whistleblower's handbook is for you. But Stephen Cohen, I want to get back to then the government whistleblowing, because it seems like these are two almost completely separate entities, because the government seems to not want you to whistleblow on them. If you see that something is going wrong, I mean, there are so many examples. I can talk, John Kiriakou was on the show a month or two ago, who just finished up a prison term. He was a CIA agent, and he blew the whistle on our torture program. I guess he went to prison because that was classified?
Yeah, it's a real shame. So the way to one of the reasons why we have 31 rules and it's a little complicated, there's no one whistleblower law. There's about over 50, and they often cover specific industries. Like if you want to blow the whistle on tax fraud, use this law. If you want to blow the whistle on auto safety, use this law. So a lot of the rules are just are very industry specific. There's some general rules, but a lot of them are like how to do it. But you're also correct. There's a complete divide. There's one set of rules for the private sector. They've gotten much better over time. There's a second set of rules if you work for the federal government. They happen to be some of the worst whistleblower laws. And for years, why? The government is the employer. So when Congress or the government pass a whistleblower law, they're passing a law that covers themselves. Imagine if General Motors was writing the auto safety whistleblower law, or you know, some Chase Manhattan Bank was writing the banking law. You know, they're not going to be so good. So the government has always been in this contradictory position. On the one hand, many people want to protect the whistleblowers, but the people who are enforcing the law are the very target of the law they're creating. So it's just not a good law, and they have refused for the past 30 years. And we've been, believe me, our organization and the whistleblower community have been pushing that federal employees should have the right to go to court on their whistleblower case. And now they're one of the only groups of workers in the whole country who are blocked from court access. Instead, they have to go to a board. And the board is appointed by, guess who? The president.
Right.
And always has a majority membership of the political party in the White House. So you have all federal whistleblower cases being ultimately heard by a political board. This is very bad, and we've been pushing to get it changed for years, but that's still the law.
So, I mean, I would think most in the American public would salute whistleblowers if you see that your government is doing something wrong. Again, in the case of John Kiriakou, here he is. He's privy to this this illegal torture program, and his conscience can't take it anymore. And so he's a whistleblower, and he's prosecuted. There's another case that I think you're very familiar with, Sybelle Edmonds. And she was a translator right after 9/11. She saw some things going on in her division that weren't right. I mean, she was 100% correct in trying to get to her superiors to say there's some fishy stuff going on here. Yet she was prosecuted and persecuted and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. She wasn't even allowed to be in the courtroom when they were hearing her case. Do I have that right?
You do. So let's look at both of those. And we did represent Sybil Edmonds in the early part of her case, and the one part that was actually victorious, which was a FOIA suit and an inspector general review. We also represented her on a pre-pub clearance, but without beating the dead horse, she was careful. They never actually prosecuted her under criminal law. Mm. She was careful that everything she did was within the four corners. What does that mean? It means that the American public never learned a lot about what she saw and witnessed, but she escaped prosecution. Now, John's case is very different because, for better or worse, he really thought, and this happens with so many whistleblowers, they think if they do the right thing, they will be protected.
Right.
They think that this stuff can't be classified. This is outrageous. And they really, in their heart of believe in the system and believe it will work. Well, guess what? It doesn't. Mm. It's very harsh. So in many cases, if these national security whistleblowers were informed of their rights and understood how they could move certain information in a lawful way, they could escape prosecution in many cases. Unfortunately, people don't know what their rights are. They engage in what I call self-help tactics, and they find themselves in hot water if not being prosecuted. One of the reasons I'm pushing and on this show, and we did the handbook, is we have a whole section in there about how to disclose information if you work in national security. Mm. And so you know, we have represented people with top secret clearances, and we have been able to get them even on television talking about their issues, but in a way that they didn't disclose classified information and could get a lot of their issues out to the public.
Now, what about the Obama administration prosecuting more people, more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than any other administration? They were overdoing it, weren't they?
There's no doubt. So Obama administration is schizophrenic. In the private sector, they were very strong. A lot of great laws were passed, and their Department of Justice and SEC did a very good job on investigating and prosecuting cases brought by whistleblowers in the private sector. Government, it was a disaster. We got President Obama, or when he was running, to commit to federal court access to federal employee whistleblowers as part of a campaign pledge. He got in office. He dumped it.
Mm.
Why? All presidents become hostile to whistleblowers, Democrat or Republican, because the people are blowing the whistle on them. They become management. So now let's go to national security. Yes, there were more prosecutions, but I want to put that in a slight context. First, there have been investigations from time immemorial. Since I started practicing law, they've been looking at and going after national security people. I believe what happened in the Obama administration is they showed no self-restraint. I've done cases before, and it's clear that these people violate the law, but common sense prevailed. Cases were slow-walked, and everyone knew a prosecution would be ridiculous. But the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, they all want these cases prosecuted. In the Obama administration, I think he just turned it over to the worst elements of our national security state and just let them do what they wanted to do, which is prosecute. So I don't necessarily think that Obama was sitting in the White House, let's go after him. But I do know from various sources that he unleashed the national security state and just let them do what they wanted to do, which, mark my word, is awful. James Clapper and the rest of the crowd hate whistleblowers.
That's such a shame, because to me, they're heroes. We're speaking with Stephen Cohen of the National Whistleblower Center. You guys recently launched the new Global Wildlife Whistleblower Program. What is that about?
Well, this is very significant. There are laws that have been on the books since 1981 authorizing four federal agencies to provide financial rewards to whistleblowers who turn in wildlife crimes, killing elephants, rhinoceros. It also includes illegal timbering, not, you know, deforestation of the rainforest, because destruction of habitat is a driver in extinctions. These laws have existed but never implemented. They've never paid the rewards. They have no whistleblower office. So when we reviewed this and saw that you had, on the one hand, some laws that can work to stop the next extinction crisis, which is ongoing right now, and four agencies that have dropped the ball for years, our global program now is alerting the public, alerting potential whistleblowers that they do have rights under these laws. Let's file the claims and let's push these four agencies to implement the law. And we have some great cases we're filing, and I'm guardedly optimistic that we can make some real change here. We also have an advocacy program on this. We need public support. We want people to push these agencies, because the difference between an extinction crisis and, say, financial fraud is when you kill a species and drive them to extinction, there's no turning back. And that just happened recently with a beautiful little dolphin out in the Gulf of California that just went extinct.
No.
And had they implemented these whistleblower laws, probably could have saved that dolphin.
How do
we know that? Because fishermen were complaining that the government wasn't enforcing the laws, and the fishermen knew who were killing these dolphins, yet it was never exploited. They never solicited the whistleblowers.
Do you have any hope that under this Trump administration, this program will work? They don't seem to really care about the planet.
Well, I am always optimistic, because no matter what, as we move the dial forward and we push, you know, there's a new administration, there's a new Congress, whatever. It's just like fighting slavery for civil rights or other issues that people have rallied on. You just have to have the long view, and you have to keep pushing.
So the Global Wildlife Whistleblower Program, you can find out more about that at whistleblowers.org/wildlife. Of course, the main website is whistleblowers.org. Can I turn in the Trump boys for poaching, wild animals in Africa?
Well, if they violated the law, absolutely. If they brought into the United States wildlife that was not permitted to be brought in, absolutely. It doesn't matter who you are, and there are some very good laws, both in customs, for customs violations, and under the Lacey Act, which is the premier anti-trafficking law. And so the crimes can occur in Africa or Asia, but the moment we get U.S. jurisdictional means or an import to the United States, we can activate these laws.
Great. Well, again, it's so fortuitous. The timing on this was just great. The new Whistleblower's Handbook, a step-by-step guide to doing what's right and protecting yourself, is out. It's available now. You can get it at Amazon, anywhere books are sold. Stephen M. Cohn of the National Whistleblower Center, thank you so much. I think this is really important information, and especially now. I'm sure you've seen on Twitter the rogue White House accounts. Would you suggest that the people who are behind those accounts, if they are real, get a copy of this book?
Absolutely. I think the key is, before you blow the whistle, learn your rights. It can be the difference between getting a multi-million dollar reward or going to jail. You know, believe me, the law is unforgiving. All because what you're doing is right doesn't mean you will be protected. Know your rights.
Well, that holds true in every in every aspect. Know your rights. Stephen Cohn, spoken like a true attorney. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate all the great info.
Great show, and thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. With that, we are we're done. We're done for a Wednesday. Wow. I want to get a copy of this book to all those rogue White House accounts, except I wouldn't know how to get them to them. So maybe they listen to the show. We'll have to tweet it out. All right. Well, big thanks to Bernie Sanders. What a great pleasure it is and honor to talk to him again. Don't let up. Get on the phone. Send emails to every senator you can. They listen more closely if you're a constituent, but hey, hit them all up. Email, phone call. This is happening in the next week. The next week to 2 weeks, they're going to try to take our health care away. Don't let them. Tomorrow's Thursday. That means it's Howie Klein Day. We'll find out what's on his mind and talk politics and, you know, move forward with the day, with the week. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. Have a great night.
Bye.